Patients increasingly turn to urgent care if they have an illness or an injury and want to avoid the emergency room. In this episode of Healthy Bottom Line, we talk with Todd Latz, the CEO of GoHealth Urgent Care. We talk about the growth of the company, the patients using urgent care, working with hospital systems, and the impact of looming Medicaid cuts and how they'll affect urgent care. I'm Ron Southwick, Lead Editor, Chief Healthcare Executive. Thanks for joining us. This is Healthy Bottom Line. Thanks for joining us here at Healthy Bottom Line. We are talking today with Todd Latz, the CEO of GoHealth Urgent Care. Todd, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Rumble.
Appreciate it. Well, let's dive in. You've been leading GoHealth Urgent Care for over a decade. Just talk about your journey and talk about your healthcare career.
Absolutely. So I did not start my career, Ron, in healthcare. I'd say I came in through the side door, not usually what I admit right out of the gate, but I began my career as an attorney. I've been in recovery for a long time, but I started out as a transactional attorney, doing a mix of M&A securities work, general corporate counseling, did a little bit of healthcare, but that certainly wasn't the focus. I was more of a generalist, but I had a really unique opportunity to leave the practice to go and be the general counsel at a healthcare business in the diagnostic imaging space. So ambulatory healthcare. It was private equity owned at the time, but was a public filer. And that's the environment where I got my first taste of, the beautiful complexity that is healthcare, right? Others will use the term Byzantine and other things, but once you're up to speed in healthcare, lots of acronyms typically used by healthcare folks, I think in some respects to keep everybody else out. But once you're in it, there's so much opportunity. Many would say, right, that the healthcare system we live with today is broken in many respects, but it also creates an immense amount of opportunity. And so I was general counsel there, ended up picking up a number of other responsibilities, ultimately ascended to the chief administrative officer role. And then after several years, ended up being the CEO of that business. That was a more mature, stable business. And then I took the big leap to come to GoHealth, as you mentioned, about 10 years ago, and really loved the opportunity of both being in the urgent or on-demand care world where patients don't have barriers to selecting where they want to go and being on the front end of care. So being that what we would call ourselves today at GoHealth, the both digital and physical front door to the health ecosystem in the markets in which we serve.
Now, I know pretty recently GoHealth announced a partnership with UPMC to operate 81 urgent care centers in Pennsylvania and West Virginia. How did that come about?
Yeah, that's a great one. So we have today 13 great health system partners across the business. UPMC is our most recent implemented. We have another that we have announced since then as well. And that one is really the culmination of opportunity. As we think about it, Ron, for us, when we go into a market, there are two main tenets to when we enter. One is a like-minded partner. So we haven't hit this point yet, but our organization, GoHealth, is a partnership-only business. So every one of our locations across the country, across 17 states, is in a deeply integrated true equity joint venture with a health system. And so for us, the first piece is finding a like-minded health system partner that sees the world the way we do, wants to be consumer-oriented, is looking to get patients into a lower cost site of care with high quality of not being sacrificed in that process. And then we think about the geography and that community access, the need state, the competitive landscape. And so our partnership with UPMC was really the alignment of both of those factors. So an amazing, really dynamic, large institution in UPMC. And one of the beauties of our partner there is that it's a very large provider system, so hospitals, ambulatory. It's also a huge health plan in that market as well. And so allows you to think about value-based care and other things. And so really a unique opportunity for us to partner with a high-quality institution, real access needs in the market. And there was some M&A involved in that and a unique set of assets that we could bring together the benefits of what we, from a GoHealth perspective, bring to the table. And then with a great partner like UPMC, we think of our model, Ron, as a 1 + 1 = more than 2, because we're taking and leveraging the best of both worlds.
Well, you've got a number of partnerships, like you mentioned, 13 different health systems and some well-known names in the hospital industry, Henry Ford Health, Northwell, Novant, Mercy. I mean, a number of health systems and what, about 400 centers around the
That's
country?
exactly right. Just short of 400. And the best part of the model for us too, Ron, is we continue to see immense opportunity for growth. So you named several of our partners. Another great one is Hartford HealthCare in the Connecticut market. And that's a great example where we started with a sizable partnership, but over the past 18 months, even in a more mature partnership, we found many opportunities for future growth, both in terms of service expansion, but just pure geographic growth and opportunity.
As you've been growing, and you've been growing fairly rapidly, how do you manage that growth and still maintain success and do the things that have helped you be successful?
It's a great question, Ron. A big piece of it is, in some respects, sticking to your guns, really understanding your model. It's not cookie cutter in the sense of we can, run the exact same model everywhere, but we certainly think about the 90-10, 80-20 principle of, from an experiential standpoint, you're going to get the same experience from a high quality consumer focused experience when you come in as one of our customers or patients. You'll certainly hear me say customer more than I say patient. That would be true of any of our partnership locations across the country. But there are nuances in each market that make it unique. And so that's the 10 or 20% of that differentiation. And I think that the core principle is starting with the patient first, thinking about access, how are we better enabling them to manage the entire ecosystem and their need state. And a big piece of that is the alignment we have with our great health system partners. So if you come to us, we're going to be that front door. So maybe we're the first touch point for you. When you come in, we want to solve everything we possibly can within the four walls of our centers, but there is, a proportion of the patient need that can't be handled just in one of our centers. And one of our largest value props, and something we try to be very consistent with across the board, is that downstream or upstream care. So you come in and you have a need to see a specialist, we want to try to make that happen same day or next day. And you would not believe how many times this happened yesterday. I hear stories about people who, went to an urgent care, maybe a disconnected independent place, or could it be even primary care, and then they were referred, let's say, for an orthopedist visit, but they're 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks out before they could see that specialist. And that's not right the experience that any of us are looking for, especially if you have that need state where you need to go see higher level care. And the beauty of our connected model, our connected care model with our partners, is that we're typically able to get you in to see that specialist same day or next day. So huge value proposition for the patient and for the insurance companies and the financial side of it, because when you make a patient wait several weeks between events, they're more likely to go back to the primary care, to go to the emergency department if something flares up. So we think about that as a cost out play in the model as well.
Curious to just get a sense of like what type of patients are going to urgent care. I've talked to a couple industry analysts said like, with younger generations, they may not have grown up with like the family doctor that I grew up with and that others of my age range grew up with, that they typically would just go to urgent care or even a clinic when they're sick, when they have a problem. Do you have a younger demographic? What type of patients are going to some of the urgent care centers you have?
Yeah, it's a great question, Ron. I would say we see everyone. So if you looked at our demographics, obviously we can cover every age span, really starting with the smallest. We do have some pediatric specialties where you'd look at right 6 months and younger. But if you think of post 6 months, we're going to see everyone. But to your point, there are several spikes. And so where we're going to see a higher proportion of a certain age demographic. And that is happening based on access to other care. So you nailed the first one, which is we see a younger demographic. They historically, by definition, are less inclined to be in that long-term relationship phase with a PCP, may not have ever grown up with one, right? They had a pediatrician, but when they moved out of that environment, Much more difficult today to either find a primary care clinician. And in many respects, they're healthy. They have episodic things, but it's not a big chronic care management situation for the vast majority of them. And they're looking for what they want, when they want it, how they want it, digitally enabled, simplistic ability to access, right? Taking friction out of the system. And so our model is perfect for that demographic. And they use us like you or I would have necessarily growing up, think about primary care. The next big spike in terms of patient is young families, and that is, busy parental group with kids trying to get everyone seen in the same place. They're maximizing for convenience and, going through and having to schedule a visit with a pediatrician or scheduled primary care is really difficult. And the fact that we have extended hours, digital access, you can omni-channel it, meaning you could start digitally, virtually, come in person if need to be tested or touched, and be, finish the visit even virtually. So we see a lot of those young, working families with kids. And then, believe it or not, we see a pretty meaningful spike in the older generation, and that's about dislocation of that historical relationship. So these are patients that have had, like you just mentioned, a long-term relationship with a PCP, but maybe that primary care clinician has left the practice, which many did over the past 10 years, just given the pandemic and all sorts of pressures and burnout. Or they had a clinician who was older than that patient, and that clinician retired. And today, when you lose that long-term relationship, it's much more difficult to find a new primary care clinician, just given the access challenges. And so, again, we will see any age demographic, but those are the three spots we see the biggest inflection points.
You talked about referrals and working with health system partners already. I wanted to ask about in terms of when you're dealing with maybe, especially like talk about some of those younger adults that don't necessarily have doctor and they come to the urgent care. But what I know some healthcare leaders said they want to do is try and get some of those folks that are going to urgent care, but also at least connect them to a primary care doctor to help manage their health and maybe catch some things before they become more serious things. So how important is that, not just to obviously, treat the pressing needs that bring somebody to an urgent care, but then with your health system partners, connecting them with the system, start building relationships that maybe can help them avoid some costly and more serious health problems.
I think it's vitally important, Ron. And that's where we would certainly argue from a GoHealth perspective that we differentiate ourselves in our model because of that connectivity into the ecosystem. And that's both with our named health system partner, but more broadly, how we connect into the community. And you're exactly right. So we're really set up to see that patient when they have some sort of illness or injury, but a key component to this for us, every time we're asking this question when a patient comes in, do they have primary care? So we believe in and understand the medical home concept, and especially for patients that need more chronic care management, more periodic visits. We can play that role if it's seriously access challenged, but we seek to get that patient connected, more deeply connected back into the system. And that could be primary care, chronic care management, specialty care, and we want to make sure that they have immediate access to any of those needs. So a perfect example of this would be a patient comes to us to rule out appendicitis. So let's say, they're having belly pain. It turns out to be appendicitis. The difference in our model from a connected care perspective is in the typical what I'll call an urgent care cul-de-sac. So an unattached independent urgent care versus the connected care model that we run, that patient's going to be escalated to the emergency department. And then ultimately it's going to be surgical. In our model, we skip a step. So because of the partnership model, we can direct admit into the hospital, saving the patient time and an extra visit into the ED and expense of that as well. And so this notion of gap closure, which is a value-based care concept of identifying things that the patient needs, we have that ability as well. Because of this connected care model with the health system, you might come in to rule out, let's say, an ankle fracture, but it turns out that you haven't had a screening done, you're missing a vaccination. We're aware of that because of the connected model, because of the access to the electronic medical record. And we can handle more of it either inside our four walls, or we can certainly white glove hand off to another provider, either within the system or otherwise, that gets that patient to that next node of care. And so you're trying to get in front of things, obviously, and avoid a more costly and a more traumatic event, a higher acuity event for the patient on down the line.
Yeah, you already alluded to being in different markets. I mean, you're from Connecticut to California, you're in West Virginia, and these are some very different locations. Just wonder if you could talk a little bit more about meeting the different needs of some very different areas. I mean, the needs of a West Virginia community are not going to be the same as San Francisco. So how do you meet those different needs?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's an interesting one for us, Ron. I'll say we're very digitally enabled. We use digital customer acquisition tools, a queuing system, and some things that you might think would be different from market to market actually are pretty similar. So I'll use the example of our digital tools, and our patients who check in online can fully register before they ever arrive, and in most circumstances can even pay. You might think, well, that's going to be heavily utilized in the San Francisco Bay Area, but in Springfield, Missouri, there aren't going to be very many people using those tools. That is not the case. And so you would be surprised at how many patients today in this world are very accustomed to those digital sort of access tools. So some of the things you think would be different are actually pretty similar, but you're exactly right. Demographically, we see some differences. A rural model, right, could be very different. So if you think about the West Virginia population versus, a Manhattan site or a, urban or mixed urban suburban site, you have a much greater access challenge. And so there, that might mean differential hours, so staying open longer to meet the need. It might mean that you see a different mix of not just, episodic injury and illness, but you have to lean in more on a primary care sort of management side of it. And so we definitely see those differences. And I would say, what an urban population looks for versus a suburban or a more rural, we certainly see that. And a lot of it is what their access to care historically has been. You might see higher levels of acuity where there is a greater access challenge in a rural market or where there are just fewer options that the patients have for care.
I wanted to ask about some of the ramifications of the big tax package, the One Big Beautiful Bill. A lot of hospitals and health systems say down the road, as some of these changes in Medicaid could take effect, they're expecting to see a lot more traffic in their emergency departments. And it just makes me wonder, in this environment where hospitals might be seeing more and more demand in their emergency departments, is there going to be a greater need for urgent care centers to help some of those patients that really don't need to be in the hospital? They might have a pressing need, but they don't need acute care. So is this a time where you see more opportunities for expansion in light of some of these changes coming into the market?
We absolutely do, Ron, and I think you nailed it, which is all of our health system partners are expecting to see a higher level of Medicaid population, and they're going to get paid less for it based on the most recent legislation. And for them, they have to look at where can they more effectively, cost effectively see that patient base. If a patient has a high acuity, life-threatening event, nothing's going to change there, right? They're going to end up in the emergency department where they belong. But as you highlighted, it's going to put even more pressure on the system, health systems and payers and everyone else involved in it, to get patients into the right site of care and to lower the cost in doing that. So if it is not a life-threatening event, then that patient really shouldn't be in the emergency department. And urgent or on-demand care is absolutely the answer for that. And we have seen over the past several years some evolution conceptually in ways to better handle those populations. But I think several things are going to happen here. You're going to see more Medicaid, exactly as you said, putting more pressure on the systems and on their crowded EDs already. We see a huge opportunity to help support the communities and our health system partners there. And then I think the other piece you're going to see is migration really out of exchanges into, Medicaid with the work requirements. You may see fewer Medicaid coverage, so more uninsured, more self-pay. And in that environment, you need to have a location where people can still be seen, where they're carrying an even greater portion of the economic load. And for us, being the low-cost provider in that environment, we see that as a meaningful opportunity as well.
Just be curious, obviously, as you continue to grow, and you work with these health systems. What are some of the health systems? What are they looking for from you in terms of maybe solving some problems? I mean, I think you've sketched out some of them already, but as you develop more partnerships, like what are the areas where they are needing most help?
Yeah, I think it's several things. So the first piece is that front door. So if you think about our model today, Ron, in any of our mature partnerships, we are the single largest driver of net new patients into the health system. So if you think about as they see more Medicaid volume, those commercially insured patients continue to be more and more important to the system and to gain market share, to be able to leverage the high fixed cost environment that most health systems operate in. So we're going to help on that patient acquisition piece. We're also the connective tissue there. So that's migrating that patient, if they come to us and start out in an urgent care center and a GoHealth center, the ability to get them into the specialist, to not let them fall through the cracks and end up in a higher cost environment or to go somewhere else. So market share of wallet, network integrity is a big piece of it. And then there's an expansion of services component. And so today in our centers and in multiple of our markets, we're doing performing a broader set of services. So it's not just urgent care. And that's why you would have heard me refer to on-demand care. It's definitely broader than just maybe how you would have historically defined urgent care. And that means some primary care. So we do transitional primary care. It's behavioral health. So we're doing more and more behavioral health services. A really interesting model that we have today is called the collaborative care model. And that is working alongside primary care to give their patients behavioral health services. That's a real constriction point in a primary care practice to help those patients in need. So we're doing that. It's thinking about direct to employer opportunities to help build those relationships for the health system. So we see an amazing amount of opportunities before us, and that's before you even get to value-based care. We're certainly going to see it's, I think you would agree with me, the evolution of value-based care has been slower than all of us would have probably both predicted or preferred. It is still happening, albeit slower than we would have liked. And the systems are migrating more and more. And I would say our partners are across the spectrum in how far leaned in they are today on value-based care. But this network that we've built and the connected care model we have is a great one in a fee-for-service model. But you could make an argument, and we certainly have at times, that it's even better in a value-based environment because of that ability to understand what the patient's broader needs are, to close gaps in care, to get them in a lower price environment, but not just about the cost savings piece. It's not just that savings component. It's that it's a better experience. We have very high NPS, very retail consumer oriented. And so the patient feels like they've won, the payer or the insurance company has won, and it's a great asset to our partners, to the health systems and the provider.
There are a lot of hospitals and health systems have had challenges recruiting and retention. I don't think I've talked to a hospital executive in the last few years that said, "We're fine on staffing, don't need anybody, we're all good." I mean, it's a challenge for a lot of hospitals and health systems. What kind of challenge is it for GoHealth?
It's a huge challenge. So I think that anyone around that would tell you that labor isn't, in the top three set of challenges, maybe isn't being truthful with themselves. There's no question. It was a difficult problem pre-pandemic, incredibly acute during the pandemic, but it really hasn't gotten a whole lot better after. You got a large piece of the healthcare labor force leave the market during and after the pandemic, and it's as hard as it's ever been to find and to retain good people. And so for us, we think of it as both a huge challenge, but also an incredible opportunity. Because if you can outpace the competition, if you can acquire the best talent and retain that talent, it becomes a significant competitive advantage. And so that's how we think about investments in AI tools, not to replace our team, but actually to make their lives easier, right? To cut down on burnout, to take away the administrative costs and burden that they go through so that they're able, especially from a clinician standpoint, to spend their time, eyes forward with the patient, giving care rather than the non-value-added services and other pieces that come with it. And so to us, it's about that attraction piece, finding the best talent. And in a model where we're partnered with large institutions, brand name health systems, that gives us a leg up in terms of attracting the best talent from both a clinical and clinical support standpoint. And then it's cultural alignment, supporting your team, understanding workflows and what's both good for your patient, your customer, and for your team member. When you have a happy team, they reflect that back on your customer, which leads to high NPS and customer experience. And then investing in training and upskilling is a key component of that too. If you want to, if you're fortunate enough to attract a great team, which certainly we feel like we've been fortunate enough to do that, then it's about keeping them and keeping them happy and giving them career trajectories. And we've really been able to do that over the years, but this is something that is an always on and an always evolving pursuit. And so, not something that you can ever rest on. And I don't see the labor market changing beneficially for any of us in the healthcare space moving forward. I think it will continue to be difficult. But the good news is there, certainly, if you have the right culture and the right focus on your team members, I think you can succeed. From a labor perspective. And thankfully, I think innovation and technology and some of the tools that are relatively new at this point should enable a better situation for our providers, our support staff, and anyone that's in that customer-facing role.
Well, before we wrap up, I'd love to get, we always like when we talk to healthcare leaders to get some lessons in leadership they've learned that might be helpful for other leaders along the way. Have there been any leadership lessons that have been especially useful for you that might be of benefit to other healthcare leaders?
I think for us, we solicit information every day from our front line. So we have something that we refer to as an end-of-day email. So every single one of these nearly 400 locations is providing that information on a daily basis. I personally read every single one of them every day. That probably strikes you as, strange and surprising. But our best information about what are we getting right, what can we improve on, what's actually happening at that point of care comes from our front line. And so I think you have to, especially as you grow and scale, you have to be able to not lose that tether to your front line, to those who are providing care. That's where the business is. That's where we're impacting patients and their lives and their families. And so I think there's a key piece to listening. To soliciting feedback, and then maybe most importantly, doing something about that feedback, not just hearing it, but making changes when changes need to be made. And so I think, what we've always tried to do, especially given our high growth rate, is, don't get too far from your roots, right? When I started, when we were seven locations, it was pretty easy to understand what was going on in all seven of those locations. That obviously becomes more complex and harder to do as you have, larger size and scale, but it's probably more important at that size and scale to remember that what's happening at the point of care is what really drives the business, and it's how you best support the communities that you're fortunate enough to serve.
You read all of those emails. How many do you get to respond to? So I would think that would take a lot of your day just reading them all.
Yeah, it's really about there's key KPIs and pieces of information. There's a critically important question in there, which is how was your day? Which is purposely very broad to understand what actually happened there. So I do read all of them. I certainly don't respond to all of them, and that wouldn't be particularly fair to our great leader, sort of in between myself and what's happening at the front line. But it's an amazing way to keep your finger on the pulse of what's actually happening out there. And the maybe the most rewarding piece for me, Ron, is to see how our team jumps on issues when there are issues and engages with caregivers and with the team and the staff. And that's a great attribute that you need to lean into from a leadership perspective when you have scale, is thinking about those best practices, right? We tried something in this market, the community really liked it, our customers really liked it. So how do we ensure that we're doing that? Back to the 80-20, 90-10 question of if something's working in a different market, that is a huge benefit to having size and scale and multiple partnerships, is taking the best of what's working in one location and deploying that where appropriate across others.
Well, this time flew. This has been a really great conversation. Thanks so much for taking the time. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you, Ron. Enjoyed every minute of it.
Thanks for listening to Healthy Bottom Line, a podcast from Chief Healthcare Executive. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. For the latest healthcare news, compelling features, and deeper dives, visit chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can also follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and X. I'm Ron Southwick, lead editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Take care.